Welcome to the Run For Your Life podcast. I'm your host, Adem, a 40-something-year-old runner who absolutely used to hate running, but now I love it. Hence, hey, it's a podcast. In this episode, I chat about running my first marathon, what it was like running in lockdown without any crowd or support, and hopefully I can give you a bit of an idea about what it's like and give you a few tips along the way. As always, if you want more info, you can visit the website at runforyourlife.uk. Cheers.
Here we are. It's a Tuesday. And on Saturday, I ran my first ever marathon. So, pretty chuffed at doing that. And I thought it'd be quite cool to run through it. How I chose to do a marathon, what type I did, the lead up, the training, how the run went, and if there's anything else I'd kind of change about it. So here we go. So I graduated Couch to 5K exactly 3 years ago. Hadn't been a runner, didn't really like it, but yeah, really proud to have kind of completed that and got to that, kind of being able to run 5k. I kind of worked my way up, and a year after that I did my first half marathon. I did the London Landmarks, really great, running around London, seeing the sights, loads of people cheering and shouting, and a really great experience. And I remember crossing the line on that and going, me if I'm ever going to do that again. So I wasn't even thinking about a marathon. And then lo and behold, I kind of decided, hey, that'd be quite fun. So cue going to March, April time of last year. So March, April 2020, was all prepped to do a marathon. I was going to do Brighton Marathon, which was going to be in the April. I did my 20-mile race, prep race in the March. And then COVID struck, lockdown struck, and all of that was gone. So I kind of had to put it on the back burner. Obviously, we're in lockdown, and you know, there's bigger things going on in the world. So missed out on that last year, and the marathon kept getting rescheduled. Obviously, no one really knew what was going on, and then that meant we kept getting moved around. Was it going to be in the following October? Was it going to be in the April? And no one really knew. So what me and my friend Ellie decided to do was prep to do a marathon by ourselves. Just the two of us, no crowds, no, you know, entry times or specific dates. We just thought, let's go and do this. We set a time that we can do it. There's just two of us, and based on all the kind of lockdown rules that have been going on, that would be fine. So we set a time for that, March 2021, and had a bit of an idea about what we'd be doing for the run, but it just meant starting training around Christmas, New Year time, and working up. As I said, I'm kind of happy doing up to halves. Not too difficult. Shouldn't really say not too difficult. All running's a little bit hard, but I've got an okay mindset for it. So I did that, did all the training, found actually I was a lot more unfit. Doesn't sound right, but I hope you get the drift. I didn't have the same fitness as I did the previous year. Put a bit of lockdown weight on. Probably, you know, mental well-being and all those kind of things weren't as good, but ploughed on through and got to do my 18-mile run before 3 weeks before this proposed new marathon date. That was fine. Really tough work. And then it came to doing the taper, and so this is 3 weeks beforehand. I rolled my ankle really badly, what it felt like really badly, because I've done it quite a few times before, and it hurt, and I was like, am I going to be able to do this race? Obviously we were able to move the times if we needed to, but hey, I'd already got the medals made, and they said March 2021 on it, so I thought we'd better stick to it. So gave myself a week's rest, bought some special ankle supports to wear, and luckily a week before the marathon date I was able to go on a 10k run, and you know what, it felt really good. Ankle felt a lot stronger, there was some stability there, which hasn't always been the issue when I've rolled my ankle, and yeah, it felt good, and it really really helped me realize why we do a taper when you're doing marathon training. So I got up to that 18 miles, and you know what, I was knackered every week. It was just moving up, you know, whether that was do a half and then it was move up to, you know, 15 miles and 16 miles, then this 18 miles, and my body was like, you're really really tired from this. But having that kind of couple of weeks rest off the ankle, which would have been tapering time anyway, of kind of gradually decreasing the amount of mileage, I realized that, hey, you know, having a little bit of rest isn't too bad. So it wasn't the worst thing that could have happened. And I'd say that's why it's really, really good to do a taper when you're running and gradually work down that mileage. And it means your muscles have time to repair, time to kind of, work better. So I was really quite happy with how a taper had worked, because I hadn't had the chance to do that last time when the marathon had been cancelled the previous March. So yeah, worked out great. So I think my training had gone okay, actually, based on how I felt on that run the week before my marathon. I didn't really have too complicated a training plan. It was basically about those long Sunday runs, getting mileage in the legs, trying to do runs in the week. I tried to do some speed work and hills and those kind of things, but sometimes it was just doing recovery over it. It's all about getting miles in the legs, and knowing that you're able to keep running even when you're tired. So the training went really well. I was happy with it, even if I did feel a bit over the weight, tired, lethargic and all those kind of things. But that 10k run the week before the marathon really did me well. I probably went a bit faster than I meant to, but wow, I was kind of like, my legs, they feel so much better after having that rest, and it did wonders for just my positivity, for thinking, yeah, I can do this race, and I'm going to be able to finish it. So then it came to that week before the race. Made sure I was eating carbs. The other thing about that taper period is you're not running as much, so your muscles are in much better condition to take on the carbs and the glycogen that you get from those carbs, and just kind of store it a lot more, which is a funny way to think about it. So don't just think about carb loading the day before, think about putting all that energy into your muscles. So it is tempting in that final run up to the marathon to kind of try and squeeze in some training runs, but you're not going to lose fitness. I say I didn't run for a couple of weeks after my longest run, but probably the best way to think about it is think of that final big run you do, the 18 miles or 20 miles or whatever it is. Now imagine how good you'd be if you'd had a few weeks rest in those legs, and then you go out and do it. And that's basically what the marathon is. You don't want to kind of do your marathon when you're tired. You want to do your marathon when you're fresh, relaxed, and your muscles are working at 100%. not that continually fatigued feeling that they do get through that training period where you're just upping your mileage constantly. So let's get on to race day. I had all my kit prepared. I'd worked out the route with Ellie, and luckily we were able to have Ellie's sister meet us along the way on her bike, just to kind of check in, carry anything that we needed, and then just frequently just pop in and out. Are you okay? Do you need anything? And keep us going along, because you know, this was just a marathon on our own, a solo one, no crowds, no aid stations, no you know, official start line, finish line. It was just two friends who'd mapped out a route, and what we decided on, we were going to start in one place, head out halfway, turn around once we've done the half marathon, and then get back, start finishing in the same place. All kind of keeps within those kind of guidelines of just being safe, and not kind of like venturing too far or putting yourself into any issues. So we had that. I'd worked out my fueling, how many gels I needed, packed some jelly babies, put some Lucozades in Bex's bag, that was Ellie's sister, in her bike bag. So I had a few things, and then also had a bag that I left in the car, which had my post-race stuff, you know, clean t-shirt, jumper, bit of food, some drinks, all important Pepsi Max was a little treat for me as well, and that was it really. Had my ankle support on to try and make sure that I didn't roll it, and that was it really. Oh, we also had bladder packs on as well on our back, so that we're able to constantly be drinking, you know, to have water. So these are all things that would be different from a, you know, an official race. An official race, I wouldn't have to carry my own drinks and water. I could rely on knowing that there'd be aid stations at certain, you know, every 5 kilometers or something, there'd be toilets in certain places, there'd be official start times, and there'd definitely be crowds, which would be amazing. But hey, we wanted to tick it off after Brighton was cancelled and rescheduled so many times. Just wanted to get it done, which sounds quite weird. I just want to run 26.2 miles and tick it off, but it was kind of like a case of finally getting the chance to tick that off of our list. So I'm going to have a little chat about the actual race. So we'd mapped out a full marathon, 26.2 miles, 42.2 kilometres, and we're going to be starting in Faversham and running along the coast through Whitstable, reaching Herne Bay, all along the Kent coast, and then basically once our kind of Garmin watches hit that kind of 13.1 miles, then we just whizzed back around and repeat the journey. So it was quite a nice coastal route to go along, it was a really, really nice first half actually of the race, chugging along. You've got things to talk about, you're happy, and you basically, I kind of had that mental thing of reaching 13.1 miles and then knowing I could turn around and I'd be on the countdown, and I'm not sure if I'd do that next time. I guess because it was a turning around point, it was very, very specific. And I think once I hit that 13.1, I was kind of like, oh man, I got to do it all again. So one of my tips would be to not kind of set that halfway mark. Maybe think about it, slightly differently, because I kind of had a countdown to halfway and then it was another countdown to the end. So quite a tough thing to do. But I'd done that that first half and it was really nice, making great time and kind of thinking, wow, if we keep doing this, we're on for a nice finish time. I'd had a bit of a bit of a niggle with my with this ankle I'd rolled. I'd had a new type of strap that I'd got for it, a Aircast A60. It's called. It's basically kind of got splints on it, but they'd just been kind of rubbing weirdly on my ankle for a lot of the time. So I've been thinking about that constantly. In the end of that halfway point, we stopped for a little bit. I took the ankle thing off and tried running for a little bit without it, but it just didn't feel right, my ankle. Luckily I had put another kind of more simplistic ankle support in the bicycle bag that Bex had, and I was able to put that on a little while later once she kind of caught up with us. And then that was okay. But I guess kind of the lesson from that is, if there's something that's niggling, you're gonna realize it. I've heard of people that have had their socks on, like a little fold in their socks, and that's created a blister, or something's rubbing incorrectly. So try and get all that prep out of the way on your training runs. Know what equipment you're gonna be wearing. I didn't really wanna have to be wearing an ankle support, but obviously that close to the marathon, I didn't really have a chance to do more runs and things with it. So just do some runs, realize areas that chafe. A little tip, if you get you can get nipple rub if you're getting quite hot, and it's for the guys and you're running a lot and your kind of synthetic tops are going up and down. What I do is I get a little bit of KT tape, like kinesiology tape, put a little bit on each nip, sorted, that's fine. Other people get Vaseline and those kind of things, but find out what works well. Practice in the clothing that you're going to wear, and obviously the shoes that you're going to wear and the socks. So make sure you got all that, because otherwise you're going to regret it a little bit later on. But luckily I had all that kind of prepped. I knew that might happen, so I just changed it all, put a new ankle support on. That really annoyed me as well. And later on, when we got to the last 5k, I think I just took the ankle support off. I was like, if my ankle goes now, I can just walk. But I'm so annoyed with the ankle. So where were we? Done half of it, had a little break, not really too worried. This is the other thing about it being a marathon without crowds. I wasn't really worried about what the finish time would be. I think if there was an official starter gun and an official finish time, then and rankings, then I might have been worried, or I would have certainly kind of kept moving a lot more. I wouldn't have had little breaks, I wouldn't have kind of had to worry, but the fact is that was always going to happen. We were running through seaside. There's going to be people on paths, so we have to move over. It's a different route, completely non-like an actual race. I've said about us carrying our backpacks as well, so again, that's going to add a little bit of time onto your runs as well. So I wasn't really worried too much about the time. There was a time that I kind of mentally thought, hey, that'd be nice. There's an idle time, there's a kind of worst case time, and actually I think I was past the worst case time for our finish. But do you know what? Don't care. Did a marathon, sorted. And I can worry about that another time. So we've done the halfway point, we're going around, and it's still fine. Knew it was going to be a little bit tough, but hey, I know I've done, we did an 18 mile training run in the lead up. I'd also done 20 miles the previous year, so I knew what it was like to do those. And that was fine. And we also had some friends that had kind of like popped up along the route to wave, which was really nice. So if you can share your location, share like a live map from WhatsApp or something like that, then they can track you and just be there to kind of wave. And that was really, really nice. But on that return, we got quite a lot of headwind from being on a coastal one. It definitely wasn't that helpful on the way out. It didn't feel like we were getting pushed along, it definitely picked up the wind had, and that was something else that I was able to kind of focus on negatively, and I kept going on about the wind, and I just heard myself moaning about it and going, oh, that wind's not very nice, and probably annoying Ellie, who I was running with, a little bit. But again, you kind of get fixated on those little things, anything kind of like push you along. But yeah, they do aggravate you as you're moving. While I'm recording this, you may realize I'm kind of walking up and down the same hill, but hey, it's nice, and get a little bit of a walk in. So 20 miles, only 10 kilometers left. Hey, that sounds like the home run. It was the hardest, that last bit. You'd be running and I think, oh wow, have I done that kilometer yet? And it'd be, you know, 100 meters. It really, really eats into you. So I found mile 20 to 24 really, really tough. I'd walk and then I'd kind of have to mentally psych myself to run and go, okay, come on, all right, let's do it. Let's kind of run a little bit. And yeah, that was hard going. But it wasn't like I'd hit the wall or anything. I think my fueling had been fine. I'd been taking the SIS gels every 45 minutes, which was great. I'd spaced them out a little bit because I'd had some Lucozade as well. Lucozade made a real big change as well, just because you're gonna, you know, you get a nice kind of sugary hit from it, and you get a different kind of type of energy. But I had it in the legs. It wasn't like I couldn't run anymore. It was just, I didn't really feel like it. I'm turning around, gonna go back up the hill. So there was definitely still energy in there, and it wasn't like I couldn't move my legs. I was able to keep walking. It was just that mental motivation to run. So I'd have to psych myself up and say, okay, come on, let's try and run until that building, or you know, that car, or anything, just kind of up it. And I would look at my watch and I'd see kind of time ticking away a little bit, but as soon as I started running, then that kind of predicted finish time would jump back down again on the watch. So those were hard. Again, had some friends pop up, which was really, really great because I didn't expect it. Like little surprise visits, just to keep me pushing along. So I'd keep doing this little run and have a little bit of a walk. Bit of a run, have a bit of a walk. And then it got to the last couple of miles, and then I kind of was like, okay, I started to actually up my running a little bit. There was a few more kind of downhill sections, which was great, returning back to the start, which we'd obviously be done uphill on the way out. And yeah, had that bit of energy, still had to kind of stop every so often, but it was just, yeah, a little bit and then a lot more running. And then it was a countdown to that finish, that finish line, and I was happy. I was happy to get to our kind of end line and the watch to beep. But Ellie's GPS was slightly off at one point, so I think try and make it up so that hers reached the 42.2 kilometers. We actually did about 300 meters more, just hit it off, because obviously if you're in on Strava, it didn't count, so we have to make it count. So I think in the end it was 42 and a half kilometers, and those 300 meters, whoa, you definitely feel it. So finished, laid on the floor, took my painful shoes off, and chunked back some more Lucozade, and I'd done it, and we'd even prepared some medals for ourselves. So I'd ordered those off of Etsy. So nice wooden medals that were, yeah, all personalised. And yeah, it's nice to have that kind of something to remember it by. So even while it wasn't a official race, I've still got something to mark it, put on my medal wall, and yeah, look back. And whilst I was a bit achy afterwards, it wasn't as bad as I thought it would be. I was effing and jeffing part of the way, when we were getting near the end. As I say, that kind of that last 10k, I probably doubted myself a little bit, but I was knew I could keep walking. It was just a running that I found hard, but my fueling was fine. So I knew I could, worst case scenario, I'd just walk the end. I'd just walk it. I was saying that to myself. But obviously, I didn't want to. I wanted to have a run. And that was that. So, marathon, sorted, did it. I'm really happy. So, how do I feel after finishing a marathon? Obviously, you can say the physical side of things, you know, a few aches and pains. But I think the thing that I'm happy about is that I've shown I was able to do a marathon, even though I wasn't in the best physical shape. Obviously, I've got the ankle, and I couldn't use that as a bit of an excuse, and certain like little niggles along the way. But I also know I'm not in the best of shape. You know, a little bit more overweight. I'm 40 now, as well, nudging 16 stone probably, which is probably about a stone and a half heavier than my kind of lighter kind of weight bracket I have been. But yeah, I think it shows that if you put your mind to it, almost anyone can do it. So it's not this kind of like unachievable thing. I remember when I first started running, when I did that Caps 5K through work, they did surveys, you know, what is your aim? What could you do? And I was like, oh, I might be able to do a half marathon maybe. And I did that. And then I was like, well, that's it. I can't really see the point in doing a marathon because it's a really long way. And it is a long way, but it's achievable. So I'd say is don't set yourself, you know, a time target or anything like that. It's just doing it, and you can, you know, it's still, even if you walked it, you've still done a marathon, and you've still completed that distance. And obviously, it's nice to kind of do your best, but I think it just shows that you can, yeah, you can still push through. So the thing I got out of it was knowing that I was able to do it even though I wasn't in the best shape. And that kind of goes into my next kind of thing of, will I do another marathon? And I think I probably will, maybe not for another year, but I'd like to think that next time I can try and avoid the injuries, I can get myself in a bit of a physical, better physical shape. Guaranteed, if I knock a stone off my weight, that's a stone less that I'm going to be carrying around, and that's gonna help improve that time as well. So yeah, I'll do it again, probably. But yeah, it'd be nice to do it at a proper race, where there's crowds and support, and I really get something from it. I don't know when that's going to be. Obviously, we're still in this funny world, and safety has to come first. But that'll be something that'll be quite interesting to do. So watch this space. So that's my marathon chat experience of running, doing a marathon without any crowds. It's a tough one, because you definitely do get pushed along by those crowds that cheering. It sounds weird. I wouldn't have walked or stopped as much if there'd been people there. It's just because I could. I think maybe that was quite nice for that first experience. I was able to do it at my own pace, be pretty chilled, and not have to worry about start times or getting home or any of those kind of things. So it's definitely a good experience, and it's nice to tick it off knowing that I could do that again, and yeah, have some fun.